the people in the nursing home are children. In their minds, they love a little bag of candy. So it's just an ongoing thing. And we have until about the middle of December to get it together. And the money and everything, too. And any toys that you have, any old bicycles that'll still work, any tricycles that'll still work, anything that a child would like. Yes, they take a big trailer. Yes, they can take almost anything within reason. Yeah.
When would I bring it to?
You could bring it up. Can you bring it to, on Tuesday? I have a truck back there. That's why I drive the truck. I told you, remind you that trick or treat candy is half price. So pick it up when you go to the store. We still have an active food fund for the children in Campeche. If you're interested in that, we'll surely take that. Anything that will go to bless and help them, we will. Starting now, I guess. Anything else?
Anyone? Are we going to have Thanksgiving luncheon, or y'all
want to
wait till Christmas?
Madge, what you want to do?
Thanksgiving luncheon, or wait till Christmas?
What's the plan here in the group?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
How many of you would like to have a Thanksgiving lunch? We're just going to have one. You want to have it at Thanksgiving? You want to have it on the 18th of November? Or you want to have it on a Tuesday in December? All right. That's all right. Is that all right with everybody? That okay? Yeah, it is. Well, you can start ahead of time, you know, and it's not so bad if you know ahead of time. Of course, let's do it then, like maybe the second Tuesday in December. Is that all right?
That's great.
I think so. Is that all right, Matt? Second Tuesday? Monday is the first of December, a Monday, and Tuesday certainly would be the second, then the 9th and the 16th, and then that'll be the last time we'll meet. Before the holidays. December the 16th? Everybody here? Well, it doesn't matter to me. Yeah. And then, what, you want to do it December the 9th? Let's do it then.
She's going to be out of town the 9th.
Well, it doesn't matter to me, but we just need to decide, or we can decide next week. Is that all right with everybody? December 16th?
What day is that?
It's a Tuesday. Let's open our Bibles then this morning to the 15th chapter of the book of Judges. The soap opera continues. If they all are. They all are. You know the reason for the brutality, the deception, the treachery, the disobedience, the bloodshed, the adultery, all manners of evil. They're here. They're here. And the reason is because there was no authority in Israel. There was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own sight. And when you have that, you have an anarchy situation where there's no law, there's no rule, there's no government. And this book in the Old Testament, as much, if maybe not more, than most of them, is an illustration of what Paul wrote to the church at Corinth when he said, the things that happened to them happened as examples to us, on whom the end of the age has come. So it continues, beginning in chapter 15, Samson goes to visit, and it was about the time of the wheat harvest, which, you know, God's providence makes everything work the way he wants it to work, to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. So he came to visit his wife with a young kid, a young goat, and said, I will visit her, but her father wouldn't let him enter. And his reason, he said, well, I thought you didn't care to love her anymore. He said, I thought you really didn't care for her at all. So he said, I gave her to your companion, which no doubt is the man who was the best man at the wedding. Said, how about her younger sister? Please take her instead, a second daughter. Now, with all of Samson's weaknesses, he knew that that wasn't right. Back in the 18th chapter of the book of Leviticus, the 18th verse says that you cannot take the sister of a wife as long as the wife is living. Isn't it amazing that he knew and remembered that? So, when he was not a happy camper about the whole thing, and in verse 3 he says, I'll be blameless. Said, with all of this, nobody could blame me for anything that I'm going to do to the Philistines. You see, it was another trick for him, another temptation for him. He's very angry now and says, the Lord, nobody can blame me for what I'm going to do, because he feels he's justified in any kind of action that he chooses to take. Now, verse 4 and 5 are just unbelievable so far as we regard anything that a person would do. Can you imagine one man going out and catching 300 animals? But the Bible says he went and caught 300 foxes, took torches, turned the fox's tail to tail, and put a torch in the middle between two tails. Well, wait and see. That was his plan. You see, here again, though, after having refused to break another law, he breaks another vow because these animals were unclean. One translation renders them jackals, and they were unclean animals. And he was not to touch anything that was unclean, and he had to touch them if he was going to tie their tails together and put a torch between their tails. Notice, now he did not harm a Philistine person, but he destroyed their food crops. And if you'll notice there, that there was corn and wine and oil. That's familiar, isn't it? That is the substance of an ancient biblical land's wealth, was the corn, the oil, and the wine. And we think about it, the corn as being food substance, and the wine as being joy substance, and the oil being the strength substance, or the power of the Spirit. So he had given them quite a blow in their economy. Back in the 14th chapter, the 15th verse, he's a threat to burn Samson's wife and her father's house. Here, her own countrymen do this to her. When he had set fire to it, the Philistine says, who did this? In verse 6, they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companion. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. Said, we can't imagine such brutality, but her own countrymen did this to her and her father's house because of Samson's action in destroying their crops out of his anger for what had happened to his wife. That's in verse 7, Samson's statement of revenge there. He said, since you act like this, I will surely take revenge on you, but after that I'll quit. I guess he had decided that maybe that would be enough violence and enough revenge that he would do. Now, we have to remember that God had given the land of the Philistines into the hand of Israel long ago, but they did not drive them out. You remember early in the book of Judges we read, but they did not drive them out. Several times over and over, they did not drive them out. Now, I've heard some mighty good preaching in the last few years or the past years on that principle. If you don't get rid of your enemies in your own life, then you will not have victory that God has promised. If it's a bad temper, if it's a compromising spirit, if it's a malicious tongue, if it's a hard heart, if it's anything that God wants you to drive out and you don't, then those things you don't drive out will plague you and destroy your standing before God. And that's a good illustration. They didn't drive them out, and they were a thorn in their side always, even to the very end of the Old Testament times. These people, various people, would plague them. They didn't do it. But God uses even the wrath of man for his glory. Psalm 76 verse 10 says that God uses the wrath of man for his glory. Samson declares his intent to get this act of revenge done, and then he says he'll quit. Verse 8, he struck them ruthlessly with great salvation, and he went down and lived in the cleft of the rock of Etam. Now, can you imagine that without any shame, without any remorse, it says, he struck them ruthlessly. And the marginal note, and in the King James Bible, mentions with thigh and leg, doesn't it? Hip and thigh. Now, if he didn't kill them, if you got them in the hip and the thigh, they wouldn't be able to fight. With great slaughter. Hip and thigh. So if he didn't kill them, he crippled them so badly that they would have no strength. This word slaughter means death, naturally. And so he goes to a cave after he has done this in the cleft of the rock. Don't you love that expression? In the cleft of the rock of a place called Etam. And the Philistines haven't quit. They're not going to give up. They go to Judah, in the land of Judah, and set up a camp in a military fashion. And in verse 10, we see the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" And they said, "We've come to get a hold of Samson and to bind him and to do to him as he has done to us." Their answer is to bind Samson. Their intent is to get even, to do to Samson what he had done to them. Think of all the harm that Samson has done with no help from any man. Some commentators say that there's great exaggeration probably in this, but I don't read in the Bible anything about exaggeration. I'm led to believe that what it says is what it means, and that we're supposed to believe what it says. Now, we want to look very closely at verse 11. 3,000 men went to the cleft of the rocks, and they said, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this you have done?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, I have done to them." See, the men admit they're under Philistine rule. Now, these are men of Judah. They admit they're under a Philistine rule. They admit their failure, but they don't even seem to see it as a failure, but rather scold and question Samson. And Samson just said, "I just got eaten with them." Verse 12 says, "They," now these are his own countrymen, "declare their purpose. We've come down to bind you." These are his fellow countrymen. "We have come down to bind you so that you... that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines." And Samson said, "Swear to me that you won't kill me." So they said, "No, but we're going to bind you fast. We're going to string you up and give you into their hands, but we won't kill you. 2 new ropes. How many of you know what a new rope is like? I mean, it is strong. If it's new, it has all the strength that a rope can provide. As it ages and dries, well, it loses some of that power and that strength. But with 2 new ropes, and they brought him up from the rock. And when he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted. Don't you know they did? As they met him. And now one more time, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were on his arms were as flax that is burned with fire. See, that would just be no more than a thread. The ropes that were on his arms were just like thread, flax, and his bonds dropped from him. You talk about a miracle in the life of a man, and you talk about something that would be difficult to accept. Your own countrymen betraying you in that way. But this is what the Bible says happened. And verse 15, it's really interesting. Let me just talk a little bit more, though, about this, the Spirit of the Lord. That's the same Spirit that brought Jesus up from the grave. It's the same Spirit that dwells in his people, that quickens their mortal bodies. That's the same spirit that'll give you joy in the midst of tribulation. It's the same spirit that breaks all the fetters, the spirit of the Lord. What a tremendous possession. When Jesus was starting to leave, you know, he said to them, and I never had seen this. I was certainly fully grown, and it was 34 years ago, 35 maybe by this time. I had never seen that. I'd been in church most all my life. I'd never seen it. That ever happened to you? But Jesus told them, he said, I'm going to send you another comforter. And what I'd never seen was he said, he that is with you shall be in you. And now just think about how good God is. The same spirit that came upon Samson that gave him such power. Now, he no doubt got double, triple portion. He got what he needed at the time. Because God's working in all this. You know God ain't dead. He's not on vacation. He's not tired. He's not sick. God is working through it all. He's never, ever out of the picture. It's what's so comforting about it. But all of this tremendous strength. Now, we're not going to go out and kill anybody. But the power of this same spirit. Anytime in the Old Testament you find the spirit of the Lord, it's the third manifestation of the Godhead. There's the Father, there's the Son, and there's the spirit, the pneuma, the power, the strength of the Lord. Now think about how blessed we are, and listen, how we are held responsible for this blessing. He that is with you, Jesus said, shall be in you. Paul got a good dose of it. He said, it's no longer I that live, but it's Christ that lives in me. Another place he said, it's Christ in me, the hope of glory. And on the day of Pentecost, before this great gift was given out on the day of Pentecost, they said to him, just like some of our dumb assumptions, he said, stay in Jerusalem now till you receive power from on high. And some of them said, is it at this time that you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel? Thinking, see, in carnal terms. Thinking in terms of their own gain. Thinking in terms of being put back where Old Testament Israel had been at one time. Are you going to do this? And Jesus' answer should put all of our prophetical speculations at rest. He said, it's not given to you to know. It's not for you to know. The times, the epochs of the time that the Father has. In other words, if they could know, how in the world do we think we're going to be able to know and give 88 reasons why he's going to come back in 88? And make all of our charts and uncover all of our discoveries. If he doesn't come, he's going to call. See, that's the thought we need to be possessed with. If he doesn't come, he's going to call. We're going to leave here some of these days. It may be very soon. Who knows? And the end result is the very same thing. But you see, what Jesus said to them is the same in a way as what Samson was empowered to do. Now think with me. I don't want to get out of joint here. Jesus said, and you shall be, wait here for the power, and you shall be my witnesses. Now, the power that Samson had, even though it looks foolish, was a witness to the power of God, because no other power could have enabled him to do what he did. Everybody understand now what I'm... Don't go out from here and misquote me now. Everybody understands what I'm saying. The power of God's Spirit has enabled men to champion many kinds of enemies. Isn't it wonderful? He said, you'll be my witnesses. And the challenge to the Spirit-filled church is that our witness will be him and not us. And this all comes with our willingness to become obedient. The Philistines, getting on down, have not certainly quit. And Samson has not quit. He said in verse 15, now think about the silliness of this. A fresh jawbone of a donkey. A jawbone. And what it says? Of a donkey. He reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. That's unbelievable, isn't it? But you see, there wasn't any strength in Samson's hand. There wasn't any strength in the jawbone of that donkey. God. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him. The same Spirit, as we said, that raised Jesus from the dead. And I love that little chorus that says, if that same Spirit that raised Christ from the dead dwells in you, he will quicken your mortal body. Just a little biblical chorus, but it's a great, great truth. This came upon Samson, and what happened is unbelievable. And he says it to a little poetical form in this Bible, that with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I killed 1,000 men. A wonderful illustration of 1 Corinthians 1:27, where we read that God has taken the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. I guess this would be a good time for me to share this. I guess it would. I won't do it right now anyhow. In the devotional reading in this book, and everybody should have a copy of it. I guess you, like me, you have more books than you can get around to. If I could live as old as Methuselah, I'd never probably open all of them. But there's something in them that just I'm delighted with. This book is called Streams in the Desert. It's one of the oldest devotional books. Over, I've forgotten how many million copies have been sold. It is a classic. And the daily devotions are wonderful. She's written other books. She and her husband lived in China as missionaries. And he got very ill, and they stayed there until he died. And then she began to write. But this daily devotional for October the 4th is so neat. It comes from 1 Corinthians 1:27, 28. God has chosen the weak things of the world to bring to naught that are things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. And listen how she points this out. Only a blast of ram's horns and a shout, and God made the walls of proud Jericho crumble to their foundations, and the key of all Canaan was in the hand of Israel. Now, just think about that. They had the key to all the Canaanite nations in their hand. And what we are studying here in Judges is what happens when a people, you hear me, when a people become disobedient to God. This is what happens, the mess and the murder and all that they've been through. This they have brought on themselves. You understand what I'm saying? See, these are valuable Old Testament lessons, and I believe that a New Testament Christian who wants to be effective for the Lord must understand these lessons from the Old Testament as foundational to our beliefs. Then she goes on, she says, only two women, one, Deborah, inspired courage in the fainting hearts of Israel's men, remember? And the other, Jael, with a hammer and a nail, laid Israel's master low. Thus the end came to 20 years of mighty oppression. You remember that in Judges 4 and 5? Only an ox goad, remember Shamgar? But with 600 Philistines were killed and Israel delivered by Shamgar's God. In Judges 3, only a trumpet blast, the smash of a lighted picture, a shout, but by these and by Gideon, God delivered Israel from 7 years of Midianite yoke. Remember that? Only earthen vessels, a shout, a blast, and the victory was won. Judges 6, 7, and 8. And then, continuing on, only the jawbone of an ass, yet heaps upon heaps of Philistines fell before it because God strengthened the arm that wielded it. And this is the 15. I'll just read the rest of them since it's all dumb stuff to confine wise, smart-aleck humans. Only a sling and a stone sent with unerring precision and directed by Almighty God on that day Israel's mighty men were put to shame. The giant Philistine was slain, and God's honor was vindicated. Over in 1 Samuel. And it gets right on up. Only a few ignorant, yet wholehearted and consecrated men and women, but by the power of God, they were put men in possession of the eternal salvation. Think about it. Only a few fishermen. Only a tax collector. Just a few untrained men and untrained women, But by the power of God, they put into our possession this great salvation. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't come out of any Ivy League seminary. It didn't come out of any great cathedral. It didn't come out of any big multi-mega church. It came from a few just simple, ignorant, but to the world's standard, wholehearted men who would give to us and all of the others the possession of this eternal salvation, which would change the possession of those who had it into the likeness of God Himself. Did you hear that? That would change the church into the likeness of God Himself through the Son, to whose image the New Testament says we are to be conformed. It's heavy stuff, isn't it? And ultimately, land them and us into eternal glory. This is comforting now, this little article. If you're one of these base, foolish, weak ciphers of this world, then the very same power from the very same Lord for the very same reason can be yours. One of the most comforting things this Old Testament teaches is that God is no respecter of persons. There are no big shots in the church. That's right. God doesn't honor one vessel above any other vessel. See, we're just as important in His purpose as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, Samson, Gideon, because He is no respecter of persons. It's tremendous, isn't it? Under the control of God, ordinary instruments indeed become very extraordinary. But you see what the point is, just these foolish instruments. And the most foolish of all of them, I think, was the jawbone of a donkey. Don't you? How dumb can you get? But you see, now here's the most fascinating thing about this, to me. When he had finished speaking, he threw the jawbone from his hand. I'd have kept that thing as a souvenir. I'd have had it framed. I'd have taken it to old America and had it mounted. Wouldn't you? Isn't that amazing that he threw the thing away? And he named that place the high place of the jawbone. That's what it says. The place Ramoth Lehi. And in the marginal explanation and in all the commentaries, that means the high place of the jawbone. Isn't that interesting? You know, God is, He's something, isn't He? The high place of the jawbone. He didn't keep it thinking he might. You know, and another thing, I said, well, I might need this later. Wouldn't you? The men agree with that because that's practical. Better keep this. I might need it later. Verse 18 and 19. That's the name of the place. The lifting of the jawbone. And it means exactly the same thing, just a little different words. The miracle of the water now in verse 18 and 19. There's a real sweet principle there. If you won't praise Him, you'll have to pray to Him. See, we don't see any thanks, do we? It isn't there. But He got his attention anyway. Josephus, the Old Testament, the old Bible historian, said the terrible thirst was to chastise Samson for what he said, I have. That's what he said. I have killed 1,000 men. I have slain 1,000 men. If we won't honor God with our praise, now you can remember this. If we won't honor God with our praise, He will drive us to prayer. You know, we could be far more victorious than we are if we would remember to thank God for all victories. Simon Cameron said this. Isn't it funny how you can remember things for 30 years? Has it ever happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
I had met a young man at a meeting at a residence not long ago, and I hadn't seen him for 15 years. And he sat there by me and told me things that I had said in Bible study. He would come to the Bible study at my house. He said, I never will forget those things. Of course, I was honored and flattered. I said, you can't mean it. He said, yes, this is what you said. This is what I remembered. I thought, thank God. But you hear somebody say something, and it puts itself in your spirit, and it never leaves. I remember hearing Robert Fierro. Anybody remember Robert Fierro? He said, everybody in heaven's going to speak Spanish. That doesn't make it true, but I remember him saying that because he had such a wonderful ministry. But what I heard this person say, Simon Cameron, you remember the Camerons? He said, past deliverances and present victories teach us to trust him for future victories. Past victories, present deliverances teach us to trust him for future victories. That'll preach. That is profound. I wish I could take credit for it. I can't. But past deliverances, see, cause us to trust him. If he's done it once, you see, and we'll thank him, he'll do it again. And, of course, what Samson, you see, he was not thankful until he got in trouble. He said, I did it. He didn't do a thing. God did it. But when he became thirsty, he knew who could give him the water. Verse 18 says, he called on the Lord and said, you've given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant. Now shall I die of thirst? And I want to tell you, there's just a little bit of sarcasm there. It's not sweet. I don't think. You going to let me die after all I've done? That's what he's saying. Do you see that? That's what he's saying. You going to let me die here of thirst? But God, oh, I'll tell you, those are two of the most important words in the whole world of books. But God. But God. Split the hollow place there in that rock, and the water came out of it. And it's funny, we don't make such a to-do out of this as we do out of the rock it's, that Moses spoke to, you remember?
Yeah.
And the water came gushing out. And this is really almost as significant, because God, through this water, spared his servant to go on to the rest of the story. And there's some wonderful lessons in the rest of Samson's story. He split the rock. I tell you, God is he's a master at splitting rocks. His word is sharper than any two-edged sword. He split the rock, the hollow place that's there in the water came gushing out of it, came out of it. He drank, his strength returned, and he was revived. So he named that place in Hakakor. Isn't that a horrible name? My. The spirit of him who called him, it says it's translated. That is, the spirit of him who called him. So he judged Israel 20 years in the day of the Philistines. He's had a very interesting... Don't you find Samson interesting?
Yeah.
You know, I was reading somewhere, and I couldn't find it to brush up on it, but somewhere I saw that the great theologians of the past have had different opinions about Samson. Some have thought he was highly immoral. Some have thought he was clever. Some have made a hero out of him. Some have made a rascal out of him. And you could make all of it out of him.
Mm-hmm.
All of the above, couldn't you? He's really one of the most fascinating characters in all of the Old Testament. Well, the drama continues and the plot thickens. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, you know, you've seen that. It's just people. Samson really is a puzzle. He's broken every law, really, of his vow except one, and that's coming. The only vow he hadn't broken was the one that he will break. The reason why he could get away with this and everybody else could get away with what they were doing is because of what it says, and we don't need to look because I'm going to quote it for you. Chapter 17, verse 6, chapter 18, verse 1, chapter 19, verse 1, and chapter 21, verse 25, that says, in those days there was no king in Israel. every man did what was right in his own eyes. You know, if we as a nation didn't have the law, and it's not the Ten Commandments that the nation fears, it's the law of the land that you can't kill somebody. I mean, you cannot kill somebody. That is, you are breaking the law. But if it weren't for the law in the land, there would be more killings. Because it would happen between husbands and wives. It would happen between parents and children. It would happen between neighbor and neighbor. It would happen between those people who don't even know each other when they get vexed and annoyed. If you could avenge your anger by killing somebody, and there was no law in the land that prohibited that, this nation and every nation under the sun would be a mass of murder. Can you agree with that? This was a mass of mess and murder because there was no king. And every man did what was right in his own eyes. And there are great lessons in this for us to see what happens to a nation where there's no authority, much less any concept of the living God. His reputation had naturally spread, getting in to chapter 16. He had gone down to Gaza, and that's the furthermost city of the five great Philistine cities. And now, don't you love the Bible doesn't sugarcoat any of it, does it? Does it? Talk back to me. Brother Chamber, what's his name? Chicago, I can't think of his name now. I wish I had somebody to help me, he'll say. Black preacher. Can I get a witness? Now, I wish you'd talk back to me. I said, God doesn't sugarcoat it. Not a bit. Samson has a lot in common with Solomon. What would Samson have done if he'd had Solomon's opportunity? Solomon had wives and concubines right in his own house. Remember Jimmy Durante? Anybody old enough to remember Jimmy Durante? You know, he was jokingly said, if you lived in Solomon's house, think about having 10,000 pairs of stockings hanging in the bathroom. I mean, he had women everywhere. But Samson didn't quite have his choice and his opportunity. But he let women turn his heart away from the Lord. He had a weakness there. The answer to his riddle had been wrested from him by the devices of a woman. Remember back in chapter 14? Now, this encounter with a harlot, and she's not named. How many of you have ever heard this, that prostitution is the oldest profession in the world? And I want to tell you, it is everywhere. In cities, everywhere. You'll get a kick out of this. I remember driving from Zurich in Switzerland over to Lucerne, where we were staying, because they can't fly through there. And this man had met us at the airport in Zurich. He opened the doors, was very courteous as he was paid to be, and he stopped my husband at the back of the car there, just as my husband was coming, walking back to the back of the car, and he whispered something, kind of whispered to him, you know. Well, naturally, me, I want to know what he said. So we get on up to the hotel, and I said, what was that old man talking about? My husband laughed, said, he just told me where the house of prostitution was, and if I needed to go, he would take me. Now, that really happened. See, that is part of the tourist industry. Isn't that a shame? That really happened. And if it happened, you know, there, just think about how many times that kind of thing was exposed to the shame of the human race. It's man's depravity or something. But the news is shared abroad here, so he went in to her, it says. And they realized Samson had come to town. I said, this is better than any soap opera you'll find on any channel. So they plot in verse 2, while Samson's in bed with the harlot, they're waiting to kill him. They figured he'd stay all night. He probably paid for all night, you know, so they figured he'd stay all night. But for some reason, in the providence of God, Samson fools them. He lay until midnight, and at midnight he rose. Isn't that amazing? See, God's providence lets things happen and causes things to happen. And he rose, took hold of the doors of the city gate, and the two posts and pulled him up along with the bars, put him on his shoulders, and carried him to the top of the mountain, which is opposite the city of Hebron. With this abnormal, tremendous power and strength. And here some of the writers say this was an exaggeration, but it's printed in the Bible. I can't say anything's an exaggeration that's printed in the Bible. God hasn't called upon me to judge that, nor you either. If the Bible says it, then we have to accept that that's what happened. But he has more strength than any man could have and less wisdom than any child. Now, buy that. He had more strength than a man could have and less wisdom than a child would have. Well, about this time, he fell in love. Now, this is the first woman that's named and the first real love that's named. In the Valley of Sorek, he loved a woman. That's what your Bible says. She comes on the scene, and the plot thickens. Her name, Delilah, means worship or praise, and it probably has roots in the Semitic culture, but she's regarded as a Philistine. And the story that is told that we have heard over and over and over. Have you heard? I think about Samson. I always see Victor Mature's face. Remember Victor Mature? Don't you, Buzz?
Yeah.
You know, when you think about Moses, I see Charlton Heston's face. Those were some wonderful movies, really. They were really very good movies, especially the Ten Commandments stuck real close to what actually happened in the Bible. But we've heard this over and over and over, Samson and Delilah. But through the last of the chapter, it begins there in that verse, in chapter 5, verse 5 of this chapter, and goes to the very end of the chapter. Samson had learned nothing from his previous experiences with women. He was a slow learner. He was a dumb cluck. You'd think. But I want to tell you something. The fleshly, carnal desires of man are stronger than any moral issue of God. When we give in to that, and you see it happens in such things, and you hate me when I say this, it happens in such things as gossip. See, there's something in us that wants to tell it. You've heard me say this before, and I don't know where I got it, but a lie will travel a mile before the truth gets its boots on. And so when you and I yield our member to the activity of tearing down somebody's character, see, we have less wisdom than a child because we are doing something that the New Testament says that we're not to do. Understand? You know, this is why that we can never be comfortable in what we learn because we keep on learning. And we keep on growing. We keep on being tempted. We keep on yielding. We keep on repenting. We keep on being forgiven. God's grace is so wonderful. When Jesus taught him to pray, he said, "Forgive us our trespasses as we have forgiven those who have trespassed against us." And that's another big trap. See, if we regard unforgiveness is a tremendous problem in Christianity. And you see, if you go to church, now this is terrible. Pray for me. If we go to church and we have such bitterness in our heart against anybody there that we won't go to them and love them, then we haven't really forgiven. We're walking on tightrope all the time, aren't we, brothers and sisters? We are always in a learning situation. And God has so marvelously given us examples. You know, rules are just made to be broken. Man hates rules. Children hate rules. As a principal, I used to go, you know, we'd have lunch at this school and at that school and be talking about projects and exchanging professional ideas. And I would go to a school, and they'd have all of these rules up on the walls, on charts. Don't run in the halls. Don't bounce the ball in the halls. Don't talk at the lunch table. And I want to tell you, there was something in those children that would look at those rules, and all hell would rise up in them. And they would be determined. Now, they didn't say it. It was just there. They didn't have to say it. But something rises up in us that makes us want to do, just like a speed limit, just aggravates me to death. Well, any of you agree with that? If it says 35, we just want to go 45 so bad. And there's no reason to go 45. We left home in time to get there on time. What is there in me? Now, come on, don't look so sanctified. Get your halo out of the way. What is there in us that makes us want to do that thing that we're told not to do? It's the flesh. It's the depravity of this old flesh thing. And Samson had not learned anything from his past experiences with women. In verse 7 through 12, and it really gets to be just like life. I mean, this could happen over and over and over again, beginning in verse 7 through verse 12. Samson teases her, continues to display his strength. Samson says, she said, let's just dialogue it very quickly. She said, where's your strength? And what? How could you be bound to afflict you? Well, if they buy me 7 fresh cords that have not been dried, I'll become weak and be like any other. He's teasing her. He's lying to her. The lords of the Philistines brought up. See, they're on the backside. They want to get rid of this dude. They are after him. It hadn't been dried. Bound him. Now, she had men lying in wait. Doesn't it sound like the network? She news, I'll become weak. You see how that foolishness continues. He's teasing her, and she's trying to get the truth out of him. So the same things happen, and he snapped the ropes like they were a thread. And then she gets more intense. Says, you've deceived me, told me lies. Now tell me how. So he said, 7 locks of my hair, if you bind them, fasten them with a pin, I'll become weak like any other man. So while he slept, see, it's getting closer. The plot keeps thickening. While he slept, she took 7 locks of his hair and wove them into a web, I think probably plaited them, and she fastened it with a pin and said, Philistines upon you, Samson. But he awoke from sleep and tore the pins out of his hair. You see that? Pulled the pin out of the loom and out of the web. Now she uses, she uses her female prerogative. Oh, I love you. You say you love me. How can you possibly... Oh, your heart's not with me. See, all of these things. Now, there are 2 forces at work here. And you, any television program would have the same 2 forces at work. The weakness of man and the wickedness of man. We read in the New Testament. You see, let me go on this a little further. Daily, she aggravated him with this, and he was vexed. His soul was vexed. Annoyed is not a strong enough word. He was vexed, impatient to the point of death, the marginal note reads. So he told her all that was in her heart and said to her, a razor has never come on my head. I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If I'm shaved, then my strength will leave me and I'll become weak and be like any other man. Now, Delilah knew that he had spilled his heart to her. She knew she'd finally gotten the truth, so she called for all the leaders, the lords of the Philistines, and said, come up one more time. You know what I read in there? That they had probably given up. These other instances make us kind of think that they'd stayed around. But she had to send for them. Come up one more time. You see, the 2 things at work here. There was a strong desire in the heart and mind of the Philistines to discover Samson's strength and the power, the size of their desire was measured in money. And we even read in the New Testament that the love of money is the root of all evil. A big reward they offered. It said 1,100. Someone suggested that they probably might have said, we'll give you more than 1,000 shekels of silver. Why just 1,100? This was just a suggestion. You would think 1,000 would be enough, wouldn't you? We don't know exactly why I said 1,100. But they offered 1,100 shekels of silver. The lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. Besides being crafty, wicked, devilish, she loved money. She made him sleep on her knees. One of the older writers suggested that she had to drug him, make him drink something, so that he'd be sure to go to sleep. That's just a thought. But anyway, he slept. He slept. And she called a man with a razor. And Samson got a haircut. And then she began to afflict him. And I read after that, and that was a real difficult thing to translate. How was she afflicting? She began to torment him. She began to taunt him. We just really don't know exactly what that means, but he had revealed his secret, and this was the only part of the Nazarite vow he hadn't broken. This was the only one. You know, it's like God would hold out hope as long as a man held on to one part of his vow. As long as he held on to that, then God would wait. God knew what he was going to do. This is for us. But this was the only thing that he hadn't broken. He had many times been in touch with the dead, killed them all. He had touched unclean animals. And it suggested that it wasn't likely that he had not had plenty of good wine at those festivities. That, you know, it probably. But now, this comes into the picture. And he allowed the secret of his strength to be revealed. You see, it was in his separation to the Lord. The hair had nothing to do with it. You understand that? It was in his separation to the Lord, and his uncut hair was a token, a symbol, a sign that he had been separated unto the Lord. Well, when he got a haircut, he took a nap in the wrong place and got a haircut. You know, in this, Samson felt a false security. He'd have never gone to sleep in her lap if he hadn't felt a false security. Can you see that? The silly thing. He knew that she was after his secret. And he felt a false security by going to sleep in her lap. See, there's no biblical proof that she gave him anything to drink. That was just suggested. But even if she had, he had a false security in taking something to drink, if he did. And he had a false security putting his head in that woman's lap, knowing that his hair was right there in her hands. I want to tell you something, friends, and this is so important. This is a universal warning to the church. It is safer to face a roaring devil than a sleeping devil. Let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. I can never, ever reach a place that we can relax our guard on our promises to God. It's serious. That's what it's in the Bible for. But he felt this false security. And she began to afflict him. He began to be afflicted as his hair was cut off, and the affliction was that his strength began to fail. His vow was broken, and his strength was removed. Isn't that a tremendous thing?
Yes.
He had taken the presence of the Lord for granted. Hear me. He had taken the presence of the Lord for granted. The Lord had provided a jawbone of a donkey. The Lord had broken a rock and given him water. The Lord had enabled him to break everything that had bound him. Strong cords, new ropes, the Lord. And here he has a false security. Are you hearing me? This was his trouble. He had a false security. He had taken the presence of the Lord for granted and assumed that no matter what he did, he would still have the Lord's presence and the Lord's strength. He had declared his plan. So he revealed his plan, and the saddest statement in the Bible, he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. The King James said he wished not. He wished not. He didn't know that the Lord had departed from him. And that is sad, isn't it? It really is. So Samson's humiliation begins here. He's blinded. He's bound with chains. Let me get back. Is this just too good not to? The Philistine seized him, gouged out his eyes. They put his eyes out. How brutal can you be? And brought him down to Gaza, and they bound him with bronze chains. And he was a grinder in the prison. One of the commentators said this was before they had harnessed animals to a grinding mill. And which pictures we see of Samson is that he goes round and round and round in a grinding mill. Because of his humiliation, his strength had gone. And he was bound, you see, to the wheel, to the grinding wheel. So he didn't have to see. All he had to do was walk. It went round and round and round and ground the grain. And Gaza is the place of this. And Gaza had been the place that so many exploits had done. He had slain so many men. I want to tell you, God can do it. Don't let any of us think that we are beyond humiliation. Let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. And that's New Testament. It is exactly the same thing. Well, the Philistines are stupid too. They ought to have had a barber right there that every time that hair grew enough that they could see it, give him another haircut. See, they were not thinking. And his hair began to grow, and the implication is that as his hair began to grow, his strength returned. Verse 23 and 24 is something. They had a celebration to Dagon. And Dagon was the national god of the Philistines. He was also known as the god of the grain. He said to have had a human head and human hands and the body of a trunk of a fish. That he had human hands for planting, but that the fish body declared the water that was needed. The hands planted the grain, and the water brought up the corn and the grain. And so they named this Dagon the god of the crop, or the god of the grain, is what he was known as. The Philistines had set up temples to him in Gaza and in Ashdod and in other places. Dagon's temple. You've read about him in other places in the Old Testament. And verse 25 and through 27, he is tremendously humiliated. They called him in. They had celebrating in high spirits. They called him in and said, let him perform for us. Let him entertain us. And they made him stand between the pillars. Samson said to the boy, I'll tell you the plot, it reaches its high point. He said, let me feel the pillars. Can't you just see it? He said, from holding his hand, he said, put my hand on those pillars there. He was thinking with his head, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. And he felt those pillars. He said, I want to lean on them. The house was full of men and women and the lords of the Philistines. 3,000 of them, it says there, were on the roof looking to while Samson was amusing them. Now here's the first time that Samson really calls upon the Lord. He told him he was thirsty, you remember? But there was just a little irony in that. He said, I've done all these big things. Now you're going to let me start? He called upon the Lord. He said, Adonai. He said, Jehovah. He said, three different Elohim. Those titles there, O Lord God, include Lord, Adonai, Lord, Jehovah, Lord, Elohim. He addressed him as he knew him. I want to tell you, when we get so destitute, we remember.
Yes.
It's a lesson there. Remember me, he says, and please strengthen me this time, O God, that I may at once be avenged of my enemies. I heard a good sermon. I got it from and I shared it with you, I think, Madge. This guy was preaching. He said, when the thief on the cross said, remember me, he was saying, put me together again. And it was fit for Samson, put me together again. Remember me. Just this time. Notice that, just this time. And Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, braced himself against them, the one with his right hand and the other with his left hand, and said, let me die with the Philistines. He has reached the ultimate of humiliation. Let me die with the Philistines. See, there's a different spirit in this man now. He knows the Lord is his hope. He knows the Lord is his strength. He knows the Lord is his salvation. And here we have the account of his victory in his death, and at his death, he killed more Philistines that day than he had killed all the time of his life. And he's honored at his burial. The chapter in the last verse says, and thus he judged Israel 20 years. Now, Samson is the last of the judges. The story of the judgment of the judges ends with this 31st verse of chapter 16, and the rest of the chapters have incidents and accounts to illustrate the depravity of the land. But Samson was a great lesson. If we break our vow to the Lord, how many of you realize that when we join a church, when we're confirmed, when we get married, when we dedicate our children, that we take vows, don't we?
Yes.
And if we are not true to those vows, we cannot expect God's blessing.
That's right.
And we take them pretty lightly, don't we?
Yes.
See, a covenant of marriage, till death do us part,
mm-hmm.
and all of these things, you know, through poverty, through sickness, and all of the things that we vow to do. And it's a very serious thing. I remembered one time, well, I remembered a lot of times, seeing people join the church. Have you ever been a part of joining the church?
Yes.
And you say, will you support this church with your presence?
Mm-hmm.
And you say, will you support this church with your tithes and offerings? Will you support this church with your prayers? Have you heard that?
Yes.
You see, and we vow that we will.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so careless in keeping our vows. And all I can say to you in good tidings and with a glad heart this morning, that God is still working on us. You see, and as we learn, God expects us to walk out what we learn. His brothers and his father's household, they buried him in the tomb of Manoah. You remember Manoah was his father. Manoah was the one who entertained the angel of the Lord and heard his wonderful promise about this son Samson. And what a character he turned out to be. But I tell you, there's much, much learning in these Old Testament accounts for the church today. That's what Paul said, and we know that it's true. So, thus endeth chapter 7:16. And you know, you wonder, why did they call these guys judges? I read this, and it really and truly made sense. It was because they brought the judgment of God. They brought in the judgment of God. So they were called judges. They were not judges that presided over a jury or a court. They were judges who brought the judgment of God. They were there to bring any manner of justice, any manner of knowledge of God that they possibly could through their experiences. But they were not the judges as we think of judges. But this period, the judges is over, but the rest of the chapter has much blood in it. If you hunger for violence, it'll be there. Much warfare in it. If you like that, it'll be there. Much deception. If you like the intrigue of the story, it'll be there through the very end of the chapter. And this chapter about Micah's idolatry is very interesting. How many of you in here have heard a sermon called 10 Shekels and a Shirt? Any of you? You've heard that one? Yeah, it's all about this next chapter. Well, thank you so much. God bless you. It's time to leave. You may go now, children.